sleep, Mom. No, I'm going to sleep.
And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
Well, what the hell are you saying, Doss? You bruised half your body sleeping.
I sleep pretty hard.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Hey, what's up? It's Brian.
And hey, it's Murdoch. Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
You get involved in the show. You drive this show with your letters. It's wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. And we have got a good one today. This is from Michelle.
Hey,
she's in Massachusetts. Yeah, a lot of Massachusetts letters recently.
Let's hear the letter from Michelle. You want to read it?
Yeah. Hello, Brian and Murdoch. Longtime listener, first time caller. I always thought my first letter to you would be about Flavor Flav, which I don't know why she thought that, but yeah. I love it.
But instead, it's about Frank Zappa!
Woo! We talked about Frank on the show before. We talked about Frank and Captain Beefheart. We talked about Frank and Deep Purple, the connection there with Smoke on the Water. So he's featured on the show a few times.
Yeah.
Relatively recently, you guys mentioned a documentary about Zappa directed by Alex Winter. It wasn't the main point of the episode. It was just when you guys were going on one of your tirades, which we've never had him called tirades before, but I'm into
it. Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. I'm going to think of everything I do from now as a tirade.
And she says, those tirades are absolutely the best part of your show. So I appreciate that. Thank you. In the documentary, it's mentioned, unless I'm completely tripping balls, she writes,
hugs,
the kids were to inherit the Zappa trust in equal amounts.
Yeah.
But in the years between Frank and Gail's deaths, two of them got larger shares.
Mm-hmm.
While rationally and logically, I realize this is a private family matter that no one will ever know why it happened, I wholeheartedly believe that if anyone could come to a rational hypothesis as to why, it would be you guys, no pressure, keep telling stories, Michelle.
Oh, lots of hugs, Michelle. This is a great letter, too. Thanks for all saying the nice things. And hell yeah, we want to talk about this at all. We spent time talking about him, but we never really talked about Gail specifically.
Right. So where does she sit on your power rankings of powerful women in rock and roll?
Well, she's not a Sharon. Not a Sharon Osbourne.
She's not Sharon Osbourne. You're right.
She's had to be definitely somewhat patient with being married to a rock star who, I guess all of a sudden I sound like a conservative person saying,
famously into the groupies, Frank Zappa.
Really?
Anything you read about this.
Yeah.
She was walking home to, you know, women lined up. It was a whole thing. I read a quote, actually, where he said something about how he was like, I don't lie to her. I just come home and I'm like, I got to go get a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you read that quote?
It's double entendre for something totally different.
It's not good, man.
But what's weird about it is that a disproportionate amount of her real experience happens after he passes away.
Yeah, from a business perspective, totally right. I forget that Frank Zappa's been dead for 3/4 of my life.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he died in 1993.
And so I was in college, and then college radio, Rykodisc. If you remember them,
I do remember Rykodisc.
Got the catalog in the early 90s.
Yep, they sure did.
And I got every Frank Zappa CD sent to me in college.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's the introduction. Other than like Valley Girl, which we'll talk about.
Right. So, like, where do you sit on Zappa? Do you enjoy Zappa?
Well, it was only until I met a couple of my pals I met in college, because it was never anything I was introduced to or whatever, and there's only a couple songs I really like.
Right, yeah.
But I have some friends that are huge fans, including my pal Doug, I'll say his name or whatever, who like went to a Zappa auction last year.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, and bought some stuff. By the way, Gail is not his first wife. It's his second wife.
Right.
They got married in 67 before the first of these kids that we all kind of know.
Like right before the first of these kids was born. Yeah. They meet in the freak folk scene, which is, you know, Zappa's coming up in the 60s. She's not really a musician herself, though. She calls herself a self-proclaimed groupie, but she does have this early encounter with recording. Listen to this quote. Then I was walking along Sunset Boulevard one day when Kim Fowley approached me and asked if I wanted to make a record. And, you know, as he does. And the record they make is a parody of Sonny and Cher called Bunny and Bear. This is the weirdest one-off story.
But
this
is like
she's not famous or anything. She's just a random person.
But on brand for Kim Fowley for like going and taking garbage.
Right.
And making it and pressing it.
And we're going to see shortly that this is one thing that all of the women in this family have in common. They will all make a novelty single, which is so weird.
It's so,
all three of them, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
So weird. It's so true. Never thought about that at all. But the way she meets Frank is almost as random as how she meets Kim Fowley. So she's
I love this.
She's a secretary at the frickin' Whiskey a Go-Go. And there's another woman who they hired to do the filing. And that woman one night said, hey, I need to go pick up my roommate at the airport. You want to go with me? And her roommate was fucking Frank Zappa. So he's returning from an MGM Records promo tour. And this is what Gail said after she met him. And this sounds pretty like what I think anyone would say if
this
she
is,
got
this
stuck.
This is what I think about Frank Zappa. This is how I picture him.
Quote, I thought he was probably one of the grubbiest creatures I'd ever seen, Gail recalls. But he was compelling. He had a compelling glare. Mm. He had a major magnetic charm, I would say.
So these two will go on not to just start a family, but they do that, and we're going to talk a lot about it. Eventually, they will run the business, the Frank Zappa business. To oversimplify a bit for the sake of the story, Frank is managed by Herb Cohen first, and then early on, and then Bennett Glozer, and then by the early 80s, Gail gets involved. And part of the reason she gets involved in any of this is because Frank's money keeps disappearing into his record deals.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they're getting fan mail by the bags, right? Huge amount of fan interaction. And Gail basically is the one, as I understand it, to say to Frank, listen, you know, people will buy stuff from you. If we have something to sell them, they will buy stuff from you. Listen to this passion you that you are in these letters. You have a fan base with money that they'll spend. Yeah. And so she helps him build this merch empire, basically.
A mail order business.
Yeah.
So here's a quote, too. That was really the primary reason for getting into the business, for setting up Barfco Swill in those days, was to be independent, Gail explains. To not only rely on a major record company's interest and ability to promote your product, and that was what the challenge was. I prefer the autonomy.
So she is a big deal and a big part of this story for this reason. And when he dies of prostate cancer in 93, as we mentioned, she inherits all of the interests and becomes a bit of a talking head for artist rights and independent ownership of artistic rights, et cetera, all the way through the digital revolution.
Yeah, and which is far out because that's sort of where I became familiar with her, you know.
Right.
But think about the weird dynamics and imagine what it's like to grow up in
this house
with these kids,
Lord.
And you're the offspring of Frank and Gail Zappa.
It is pretty wild. There's a great Billboard magazine interview that's in the show notes.
Yeah, you should check that out. This is from 3 years before Frank dies, too. And remember, the kids at that time, this is 1990 when that article is, they're 22, 21, 16, and 11 in that article. And they asked them about what it was like growing up as Zappas, and you read it.
This is Moon Zappa talking. It was very interesting. I'm sure Dweezil probably told you that all of our friends wanted to come over here because we were allowed to say the F word. We were free. We are an example of what you get when you are allowed to listen to heavy metal. So let's introduce each of these kids because they're obviously a big part of this story.
So oldest to youngest, we have Moon, uh-huh. Moon Unit, Dweezil,
oh, yeah.
Amit, and Diva. Now, 34 years after that Billboard interview that we just referenced, they're in between 45 to 56 in age.
This is from a piece by James Atkins from earlier this year. Quote, the Zappa kids, Moon, Dweezil, Diva, and Amit, had an unconventional upbringing by the standards of the day. They called their parents by their first names. They decided whether or not they wanted to go to school. They were given the kind of freedoms that children dream about.
I call my parents by their first names, but they were monsters and not musicians. Let's do a little background on each of them first. Let's start with Moon Unit. Everyone's favorite, unfortunately, can you imagine that's your name and your name's a punchline for people?
Well, and so that's
because people
thing.
Made fun of it.
The first I really knew about Frank Zappa was what he named his kids.
Yeah.
Like as a young person, I just heard like there was Dweezil. This crazy musician who named his kids Moon and Dweezil.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a bit older than me. Mm-hmm. But you still would have been pretty young when Valley Girl came out?
Yeah.
Do you have any relationship with that song?
Yeah, it was... So I heard it before I became friends with my really good pals now who are huge Zappa fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought it was just a novelty stupid. Song, like Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
I had lots of those records as a kid. They were like, you know, funky favorites, novelty, all novelty
stuff. Was that
stuff.
On them?
That was on one of them. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is worth talking about here as a way to introduce Moon because it's rooted in the context of what we're really talking about, which is the Zappa parent and sibling relationships. So the story is that this song happens because a precocious 13-year-old Moon will write a letter to her dad and slip it into the basement studio under the door.
Yeah. And this is the actual letter.
and it's adorable. Daddy, I'm 13 years old. My name is Moon. Up until now, I've been trying to stay out of your way while you record. However, I have come to the conclusion that I would love to sing on your album. That's what she wrote.
She had this bit at the time where she would make the family laugh by doing impressions of surfer dudes. And she would use this exaggerated accent. And so she suggests, because this is like the bit that works at the dinner table, that she could bring this into this artistic collaboration if they were to have it.
Yeah. So it takes him a while to warm up to it. But in true Frank, you know, fashion, one night he wakes her up at 3 a.m. and tells her to come to the studio.
Now, everything about the creation of this song has taken on these mythic proportions, okay? You'll read that they record right before he leaves on tour, and so he burns her an acetate of it and then skips town, and then she gives it to K-Rock in L.A., and they start playing it. But you'll also... I'm a little confused as to exactly what happened. I think over the years, there has been like a scripted version of Here's How We Tell the Story, and then she's had her own feelings injected into it with an adult perspective. Because...
She was a kid.
She was a kid. And she claims now, as an adult, that she never thought that it would be released. She thought it was a private joke just between the two of them.
Yeah, and here's a quote from her. Quote, having it appear on an album was kind of an exposure and embarrassment and betrayal for me. I wasn't thinking about, we're making a product. I was thinking, I'm spending time with my father.
Well, but what happens, though, is she becomes a celebrity because of this. Like, beyond just being Frank's kid. I mean, it's definitely hand in hand with that, but this is his hit.
This is his only hit.
And I don't think...
In terms of commercial hits, right? People...
On the radio, playing on K-Rock. So,
Tears Begin to Fall is a better song.
I don't think people realize that the term Valley Girl, the vernacular of like, oh my God, Becky, like all of that comes from her. This is her. This is a creation of hers. Now, I read some stuff that said, you know, there were versions of this floating around or whatever. This is the mainstream cultural touchstone, though. And you know the movie that comes out a couple years after this with Nick Cage in it called Valley Girl?
Watched it lots.
It is basically Romeo and Juliet, but
it's different.
Anyway, it is inspired by this song.
Yeah. Here's a newspaper article from January 14th, 1983. And this is where things is totally different. If you didn't know this about Zappa, rock singer Frank Zappa wants a judge to stop production of a movie called Valley Girl. So think about it. Song, movie, saying it infringes on his trademark derived from the hit song he sings with his daughter, Moon Unit. Zappa said if the movie is not stopped, his program of licensing the Valley Girl trademark for clothing, cosmetics, keychains, greeting cards, dolls, and other products could be damaged. Can you imagine this lawsuit like 20, 30 years before where someone's like, yeah, you can't make a movie called The Girl Can't Help It?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, nah, that's going to infringe on the song title. But... think about the cultural touchstone that it's this freaking song.
So
it's like the voices and that where people do that today. Yeah, it's
I mean people
from,
still do that. Our kids do that,
yeah.
And it is from this, which happens, you know, the year around the time I am born. So here's the thing. Again, it's just such a great example of this question of what was it like to grow up Zappa. So you never see your dad. You convince him to hang out with you by making a joke song with him. He then puts that song on an album without your permission, apparently. Mm-hmm. It becomes a hit, and then he sues a movie production so that he can merchandise the idea himself. Now, I can see how a kid would feel like they get a bit lost in all of that.
Yeah. It's so fun hanging out with you. Oh, wait, it's corporate marketing.
And the thing we haven't said.
Which seems like the antithesis of what Zap is about.
Well,
kind of.
Here's the thing. So, now, that's the thing about him, right? It is... on record that he was having conversations with movie studios about doing this before, and the everything broke down.
Yeah.
So he was involved in the early conversations about a Valley Girl movie.
Yeah. This is another piece on the family that points to that something else is going on that's important to our story. Moon says Valley Girl also altered the Zappa family dynamic in another way. I think, this is her quote, I think it bonded my father and I in a way that my mother was resentful of. Because now I'm in photographs with my father. I'm paired with him. I went on Letterman with him.
Yeah.
We did a bunch of talk shows.
Yep.
We traveled together here and there. So he and I were two showbiz people in the house.
And we already know that she spent the first, I mean, she's 14, right? So she spent the first 14 years up to this point competing with other women. And now she's competing with her own daughter, Gail. You know, for Frank's time and attention, right?
Yeah,
and so that wouldn't make you upset. She does parlay this, and now we're switching the she back to Moon Unit. Moon does parlay this into a bit of an acting career. And do you remember her being a guest VJ on MTV? Like, she gets MTV time out of this.
I was the first kid in the neighborhood to have MTV. Yeah, and for me at that age, other than Valley Girl. That's how I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Because I knew... Because
so that's how you knew Dweezil?
How I knew who Frank Zappa was, because I knew who the kids were. Because, like, who are the people... Who are those people that have those crazy names? Like, oh, that's Frank Zappa's
kids.
And they
just get to do whatever on MTV. Like, they don't even have, like... I don't think they had, like, regular jobs. They just got to come in.
And it always felt like they were on a different script than, like, J.J. Jackson or Martha Quinn or everybody else.
We're going to find out that they were.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they totally were different.
Because it's not just Moon that does this. Dweezil will do it, too. Let's talk about him. Now let's transition. We've talked about Moon. Let's talk about Dweezil.
Two great stories about Dweezil. We'll talk about Dweezil's name because we can't.
Because what the hell?
Yeah. And then he goes on Howard Stern and runs his mouth and he loses the MTV job. We'll talk about that in a second. Which, by the way, I can see me doing what he did.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we younger you.
Yeah, I mean, now I just...
Now you're such a gentleman.
I have kids to support over here.
Okay, so Dweezil, what does that mean? That is a nickname that Frank had for one of Gail's toes.
That's right. So she tries to name him when he's born, but the nurse won't let her do it. Can you imagine this happening now with a nurse like, uh-uh, honey?
The nurse is like, you are not allowed to name your kid Dweezil. And so what happens instead is that Frank, as a bit, starts rattling off the most normal white bread names he can think of. It's basically like a list of his friends. And so he just yells milquetoast white guy names.
And only because, Brian, do I really know what Dweezil's birth name was, because his registered birth name was Ian Donald Calvin Euclid Zappa. Never knew that.
They always call him Dweezil.
Yeah.
And so he will change it legally to Dweezil. So it is Dweezil now.
Yeah. And he's the Zappa kid who most quickly and directly starts and follows in his footsteps.
Yeah.
He gets guitar lessons very famously from Steve Vai, and he's on stage with his dad at 12.
And because of this, he arguably has the most interaction and closest relationship with his dad in a lot of ways. He could use his musicianship as a pass into the studio. Moon is writing letters and shoving them under the door. Dweezil's allowed to come in because he plays.
Yeah.
So it is different. He records with Eddie Van Halen. This is famous. You can hear him talking about it 2 weeks ago with Rick Beato. And as mentioned, like his sister, he will get a gig on MTV. So let's talk about the Howard Stern of all this.
Yeah, so he told this to the HuffPost in 2010. This is all from Dweezil's mouth. Well, I don't really remember it to a great extent, but ultimately, when I was on MTV, I wasn't looking at that as, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I only did, this is what is fascinating. It's like when they record, they shoot Wheel of Fortune, and they do like the whole year in like, you know, 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said that he did 12 weeks over a period of 2 years. And I'm like, what? Because I remember thinking he was just a regular
DJ.
But
he was there all the time, right?
Yeah, right, right. And people think that I was on there a lot more. That's right. At the time, MTV was playing a lot of videos and a lot of the same ones over and over. And I was kind of making fun of some of the videos. And then I was just sick of seeing them. At a certain point, though, I started saying stuff about the ad campaigns, too.
You can't do that.
So the powers that be didn't like that too much. And then when I was on Howard Stern saying, there's a lot of crappy videos that are being played on there. I was just telling the truth. But you can't really tell the truth and expect the management to want you to continue to do that. The management at MTV wasn't too pleased, but my background was that. And this is what's freaking important.
This is the part that
my
ties it all
dad would tell the truth about whatever he was talking about, and he didn't lie, right? You know?
Yeah. And again, this is the answer to the question, what's it like to grow up a Zappa? So Dweezil will have his own recording career and be kind of a fringe personality for his whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, still to this day.
And I mean, but for me, it's like, fringe personality, got to date Molly Ringwald, Demi Moore, and Lisa Loeb.
And then I saw other people on that list later that I was like, Jennifer Connelly, I think, was on that list. Yeah, lots of
career
folks.
Opportunities, Jennifer Connelly, or yeah, it must.
Yeah, about that time. Okay. And then in 2006, he tries this idea of really owning the Zappa name. Because they all do it because it's their name, but he decides to take Frank's legacy on the road. And he creates this thing called Zappa Plays Zappa. And he's still doing this. A good friend of mine saw him play recently and said it was absolutely incredible.
Spoiler alert, him calling this becomes part of this whole story that Michelle's going to enjoy too.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what Zappa Plays Zappa is, though.
Yeah, so he got a bunch of musicians to play Zappa music with him, and this intros it to a whole new audience, right? I mean, people who probably didn't listen to him while he was alive, but he's able to incorporate original Zappa guys like Steve Vai, Terry Bozzio, and guest spots. And so it is this discovery tribute thing that's all its own.
Yeah.
It's kind of his very cool homage to his dad, basically.
So those are the two older kids. And most people, I would say if you listen to this show, you at least know who Moon Unit
and Dweezil
and Dweezil are, right? Maybe not, and that's fine, but that's who they are.
Yeah, you might listen to this show and the only musician celebrity person you know is Glenn Danzig, and that's fine too.
I texted Murdoch a picture of a poster that on the night before Halloween at a club that we both like that's near his house, they are doing three tribute bands.
That's right.
The Nirvana tribute opens, and then the Misfits tribute plays, and then the Ramones tribute plays.
Yeah.
And Murdoch, all he does is write back, "That's my bag." So that's what we're going to be doing. More reports to come. Okay, so those are the two older kids, Moon and Dweezil. But as we've already stated, there are these other two. They're the younger kids. So Amit is 5 and 6 years younger than Moon and Dweezil. Moon and Dweezil are about a year apart. And so you have Amit, who's 5 and 6, respectively, years. And then you've got Diva, who's a full decade and like 11, 12 years behind them.
And Amit was named after Amit Artkin, who is the co-founded Atlantic Records. And basically was instrumental in signing Zeppelin.
And who
Rolling Stones.
Who is Diva named after?
Diva is apparently named after the idea for being really loud. I don't know. That's all. Is that it? I don't know.
I think Frank has said that on the record, that she was very, very loud. So they have these two have lives and careers that in very broad strokes are pretty similar to their siblings.
But different.
Yeah, but different, but they're always sort of on the periphery of music and movies. Amit was married to Selma Blair really briefly at the beginning of the 2000s.
Diva makes clothes, and this is interesting. Thanks, by the way, Brian. I had no idea about any of this. She sells them online, including the dress that Rob Trujillo's wife wore to the 2009 Grammy Awards.
Whatever, don't act like you didn't know that, but random Metallica fact.
Also, so like her sister, she had a novelty song.
She had a novelty song. This, all three women.
And it was less successful, and not like your band, Tipper Gore was playing drums. Tipper Gore, by the way, could play the drums.
Tipper Gore also becomes... Okay, so Tipper Gore is publicly an enemy of Frank Zappa on television in the 80s.
And
then becomes friends.
And Frank, I don't know if you... So here's our age difference. I don't know if you ever saw this. The PMRC, the whatever that thing was, where they started putting the explicit lyric stickers or whatever, and it was the Washington Wives and all that.
Yeah.
Zappa went to those. Zappa spoke at those hearings. He was there in front of Tipper Gore.
In front of Tipper.
Yeah.
I mean, he was called, some of his music was called into that whole conversation.
John Denver spoke at that, too. And he was like talking about how, I remember the thing that John Denver said is like trying to put these things, these stickers on these records while you turn on TV and everyone's going, Blue Jays suck. Blue. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense. Which for me, it's like, well, it's a little different when you're talking about Blackie Lawless and the exploding.
It's like John Denver hadn't seen heavy metal. Like he'd only seen this. He's like, I know I said damn one time, but you got to let me off the hook. And it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about, John.
What is this? We are a sexual perverts band.
Oh my God. Okay, so this let's talk real quickly about Diva's novelty track. It is in the show notes. It is quite a thing. If you want to watch it, go watch it. It's weird. Also, fun side note, like we said, Tipper Gore, friends with Frank Zappa. But to stay focused on the kids, all these siblings will make music together in some way, shape, or form at some point. And when I read about it, there's an interview where Dweezil's talking about recording an album with Diva that they never finished. And it's like akin to me talking about like being in the kitchen with my sister. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like what the Zappas do is they hang out and make music. And sometimes it totally is like not anything that even goes public. They just do it.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the conflict that really Michelle had asked about that brings all this, the characters, the family members and everybody together. That's 2015. And that's when Frank's widow, that's when Gail dies.
Okay. So basically the best text for the rest of this conversation is from a sit down that Jeff Ayers from the Washington Post did with the Zappa siblings. It was published just about 2 months ago. And part of the reason that this has popped up and that this WAPO thing happens is because Moon released a memoir this summer as well. And we'll be pulling a lot from this Washington Post article. So let's start with this capsule explanation that just kind of sums up what Michelle was mentioning in her letter. So just to get us all focused.
So straight up, Michelle, here's this. In a maneuver that they didn't discover until after she died, Gail altered the family trust that she and Frank had signed in 1990, 3 years before Frank died. Instead of splitting the estate evenly four ways, she gave 30% to Amit and Diva each, making them the sole and exclusive managers of all business, and then Dweezil and Moon got 20% each.
So Moon tells Rolling Stone in 2016 that when Gail was dying of lung cancer, quote, she began to say weird things. She said, "Do you forgive me for what I've done?" And I said, "Sure," not knowing what she was referring to.
And I think when you do something we've never done on the show before, Brian, and yeah, well, yeah, I love you, buddy. We need to do some financial education for everybody because you can't understand this story without understanding the financial structure that is a family trust.
That's very true. Okay, so let me ask you this first, good old boy from small town Tennessee. Do you understand trusts?
Hell yeah, I had it. No, I'm just kidding. My dad spent all of our money.
I will say, preacher's kid from the middle of America, I also have no concept of having a trust that has my name on it.
But it's understanding what a trust is so important, and understanding what a trust is versus a will is so important.
To this story.
Yes.
Not necessarily to your life. Though if you have a trust, God bless you, and you're patreon.com/rockandroll.
It's so amazing. The trust is important because if someone passes away and you're an heir to that, if you have a trust, it keeps you from people trying to sue you in probate and trying to take shit from you and saying, Brian owes me money, so I'm going to sue you because Brian didn't give me the stuff. It's like if you have a trust, like that stuff stays locked up. Anyway, let's make this
some of the simple. Motivations have to do with taxes.
Yeah.
Right. And typically when an artist uses one, it is to control finances, but it's also to control the legacy, to make sure that you're giving power over to someone who won't abuse your likeness or your art, which is obviously important when it comes to the Zappas.
And a will is for after you die. A trust can be while you are still living and allows you your assets to avoid probate so beneficiaries can get to the inheritance more quickly.
So there's like three key roles if you're going to talk trust, right? You've got the grantor that was hit. It was their stuff. So in this case, Frank.
Frank. Then Gail.
And then Gail.
Yep.
Beneficiaries. So those are the people who get the stuff. So first Gail and then the kids. And then you have the trustee who is the person who is in charge of all the business side of it, which is not glamorous, but does give you control and lets you make decisions from a legal perspective. So in this particular situation would be valuable.
Right. And in most cases here, a third party is the trustee.
Yeah, this is where this gets fucked up.
You hire someone to do it who specializes in that. But this is what makes this contentious is that Gail decides to make two of the children trustees.
So to understand what they now control or have access to, we have to go back to Frank's death and understand what Gail had inherited control of and what she had done with it up to this point.
Yeah, and there's a moment in the Washington Post article where the writer quotes Frank saying before his death that it wasn't important to be remembered, and then the writer says this. Yet, Frank, like Prince, apparently, saved everything. Everything. There's a vault packed with films, drawings, hundreds of reels of music from the first tapes he recorded in the late 50s to virtually every concert that he ever performed. He advised his wife to sell it. Instead, she took over the business and cast herself as the keeper of the Zap Flame.
So then he goes on to describe what this actually means in practice. So back to the text. She filed or renewed trademarks for everything from his name to the image of his mustache.
Yeah.
She sued anyone she felt was using Zappa material without permission. She spent millions fighting to get Frank's master tapes back from Ryko Disc, which you alluded to earlier, and its parent company, Warner Brothers.
And then it gets very litigious, suing any and everyone.
Sue everyone!
Sue them all! And spending down a lot of the trust value in the meantime because of that. So this gets us back to Zappa plays Zappa and sets up this conflict between Gail's role as a business person and a mom.
And a mother.
So when Dweezil forms that group in 2006, Zappa plays Zappa, she makes Dweezil pay royalties to her.
And it's not just that she makes him pay royalties. It's that they argue over how much he owes her. But this will also become the first big fight that we hear about after her death. So the younger sibling, specifically Amit, will fight with the older, specifically Dweezil, about his ability to continue to tour under the name Zappa Plays Zappa. So April 2016, Dweezil gets a letter from the trust saying that he would be in violation of trademark law if he keeps using the name Zappa Plays Zappa. Quote, there were cease and desist letters for so many bands that were trying to play Frank's music, says Dweezil, and then I get one. Now, there's a lot of talk around this time where when Amit is asked to defend himself, he and Gail both at different points kind of paint this as a thing about precedence. It's like if we let Dweezil do one thing, then we have to let like dude in Nebraska do it too for same price or whatever. So they want to make sure it's like cost prohibitive and hard to do because they really don't want anybody else doing it. So like that kind of makes sense from a business standpoint, but it's like hard when you mix the business and the family together.
But let's tell Michelle and everybody listening what he changed the name of the tour to.
Oh yeah. So instead, Dweezil decided to change the name of his tour to 50 Years of Frank. Dweezil Zappa Plays Whatever the Fuck He Wants, the Cease and Desist Tour. That's pretty good.
It is.
That's pretty good.
Michelle asked specifically about why in the world Gail would have made this decision. Obviously, there's lots of speculation about this, and no one's, you're not in the room. But the most basic explanation from Amit and Diva's side is that they were more involved in running the trust while Gail was alive. And that's the argument they will arm their respective lawyers with.
Right. It's like, hey, we were already doing this. This is why she would have had us do this. But some big stuff comes out in Moon's memoir and in the Washington Post piece from this summer. And the background is, okay, remember how we mentioned that Gail was super litigious? She gets into a fight with Warner Music, as it's alluded to in something you read earlier, I think, about the digital rights to Frank's catalog. Okay. And so that happens in the mid-2000s, and there are protracted legal battles. Like, this keeps going on and on and on and on, and when she dies, the estate is quote-unquote beyond broke, according to a 2016 article in Rolling Stone. That is what Dweezil says. He says it was beyond broke, thanks partly to that lawsuit that Gail launched against Warner. And Amit claims the estate will eventually be in good financial shape. This is from that 2016. Now, if you flash forward to this summer, read that Mark section of the WAPO piece.
Yeah. Near the end of Gail's life, Moon recounts in her memoir, she gathered the children and explained that she needed cash to make final payments to Warner for Frank's catalog. She had asked them to sign over their rights to an insurance policy that she had taken out.
Next sentence, Amit and Diva agreed, but the other two balked.
Did we talk about my buddy that went to the Zappa auction? We did talk about
that. You mentioned that you have a buddy that went to a Zappa auction.
He bought... so obviously, this gear was for sale last year.
Yeah.
He got Zappa's first guitar.
Yeah.
Very first guitar that he Frankensteined up and like... And by the way, he was trying to figure out how to get it to work, and he took it to a luthier like to get... Because he,
Yeah.
Plugged it in, nothing. And there were
I just paid a lot of money for this guitar and it doesn't play.
They looked at there are batteries in it.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and the batteries were corroded. Switch the batteries. So crazy. But he's got a B3 that the band used to play.
Yeah.
And he's got this microphone, it's a very famous microphone. And there's more stuff too. But clearly all those things were for sale. And that was last year.
Yeah, and that's, so this is an ongoing thing, right? The estate has all this stuff that they've been unloading. And we'll get to that. But back to where this is, right? So Amon and Diva's lawyer has confirmed that they could have restored balance to the trust. So this comes out in the research that there was a legal maneuver for that. They would have just had to get a judge involved early on. Meanwhile, the kids find the will that Frank had originally made, which before he died. So this is like the 1990 one. And it has everything in four parts.
Right.
Four equal parts.
So basically, the older kids are honoring Frank. Younger kids are choosing to honor Gail.
Exactly. So you get into this convo about who should be honored. The original creator or the longtime defender. Which is a fair conversation. I mean, a lot of this, there's two sides of this, right? Like, on one hand, she really protected his legacy. Mm-hmm. She became a talking head for artist rights. She did a lot of stuff, but she got into these battles where she wasted the money of the trust. And one thing that we don't really spell out here, but the other kind of punch in the stomach to this is that, yes, the divisions of the pieces were 30, 30, 20, 20, but the 20, 20 were specified to not get paid out until the trust itself was back in the black.
Ugh.
So like it was like $5 million in the red. So they're not getting anything from this estate at first until hence what we're going to get to, which is eventually selling things to your friend.
And for me, this is my opinion, is this goes to the original creator. Without the artist, there is no work.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no trust and there's no will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the creator is the person that does it. So without the creator, you don't have a defender.
So if we're still talking about why Gail did this, in the WAPO article, Dweezil mentioned something that draws me back to that Moon quote that I read earlier, where she mentions the Valley Girl situation and how it aligned her with Frank and made Gail jealous, you know, which is literally 40 years ago. Read that quote from Dweezil.
Even today, Dweezil Riley suspects that his mother was driven by some Oedipal, is that how you say
it? Yeah.
Oedipal impulse to, quote, take the favorite children of the father and kill them.
Okay.
End quote.
So, having dug through all this stuff and written this episode, bingo. That's it for me. That's what I think it is. I think she was after those two because they were the closest to Frank.
Now, this happened almost a decade ago, and in the time since, two major agreements have come into play. One, 3/4 of the siblings reached a legal agreement. Moon Unit refused to sign on to this with a healthy mutual non-disparagement clause. I'm glad these things don't exist in my life. It's just being completely mentally ill. And number two, something has become pretty commonplace in the world of catalog ownership, and that's selling all the rights off completely.
Yeah, so this finally happens in 22. The Zappa Trust will sell Frank's music catalog, vault, and likeness to Universal. This allows Amit to step away from the burden of managing it himself. The price tag, $30 million. So even if you take $30 million and you split it in 20-20, 30-30, these kids are doing okay. In the WAPO reporting, it is mentioned that Amit gained like 70 pounds during the time that he was in charge of the estate, and that in these 2 years, he's already shed almost all of that.
I always thought Amit was the nicer looking of the crew.
Dweezil's eyes, dude. That reporting additionally really hints at the bulk of this animosity to this point being between the two brothers.
The brothers, yeah.
Right? The reporter actually gets everyone but Dweezil in the same room during this reporting. And he notes that Dweezil's, I'm going to read now from the article, quote, wife sends regrets on his behalf via a text. Read the text.
Dweezil isn't interested in spending any time in the presence of his brother ever.
Period.
Yeah. You know, there was a period where they had a band together. Do you remember that?
What was it called? Z?
I think. There's something that's in, there's a video that's in the show notes. I remember this, but I can't like put it the whole thing together. Okay, but anyway.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Zappa house?
Yes. Let's do that.
This is fun. Somewhere in the disentangling of the trust, it becomes necessary. It's like a thing they have to do. They have to sell the house. And in this article in the Washington Post, Moon actually, he actually records this conversation where Moon is pissed at Ovid in retrospect because she didn't tell him that Lady Gaga was buying the house.
Yeah.
And it's because there's all these NDA clauses. And he's like, dude, you don't understand how this works. And this is, okay, so if we're going to see it from Ovid's perspective, this is a great moment to zoom in on because you have this guy, he's gained a bunch of weight, he's very unhappy, he's in constant conflict with his siblings, and it's all over money, and I don't think any of them are broke on their own. So at a certain point, you know, it's not like they're struggling to survive,
yeah,
but they're fighting about dollars and cents. And he also, like, they don't understand the nuances. They don't understand that he only dealt with lawyers. It wasn't like Lady Gaga came to the house. You know what I mean? Like, there's just,
yeah,
it's just like, he's like, you don't understand how the business of this works.
Yeah.
And yet you want to get mad at me. And so I think the right move, the thing they should have done in 2014, but though I don't think it was as in vogue to do it, to your point, is sell the catalog.
Yeah, and it was a long time ago. Like, it's not like now it's really common.
Now everybody sold their catalog. Like, yeah. I think Bieber sold his catalog. Like, everybody sold their catalog.
Bieber sold his catalog. And think about that. Like, how crazy that is.
And this is why we're going to have Bieber albums until the world ends. Because we'll just teach computers to sing like Bieber.
And Lady Gaga sold the house to Mick Jagger's daughter.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
She totally did. She totally saw it. So Mick Jagger's daughter.
If you Google it or
Google,
you know, just hit the show notes, you can see.
You can Google it.
You can see all of the pictures of this house. It's amazing. And I, you know, a lot of, if you look at the stuff from like 18 when Lady Gaga bought it, you can see the rooms like before anything was done to them with the portraits of Frank. And there's two recording studios. Swimming pool, tennis court, like it's on acreage.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
I do have one thing I wanted to tell you about my pal that mm-hmm. bought some stuff at the auction. This is lastly, we'll talk about that. I was like, tell me the other things because I want to make sure we talk about it. And he's like, well, here's the cool things. So anyway, he bought a bunch of stuff at the auction, and there's I remember him telling me, and it was just so fascinating that there's like, it's not even like a sampler, but it's something that. Literally, they could have like erased, like there's like, if it's a magnetic tape or whatever is in it, like there's actual music that wasn't erased.
It's just sitting on it.
Well, no, like it's a piece of musical equipment, whether it's a synthesizer or something that has samples or like it's all the stuff still in there. So none of it, like, so he can go in and hit a couple things on there, and he's playing with the same. He's
playing with Zappa's
stuff. He's playing with Zappa's music. So he's recording music.
Unbelievable.
With, yeah, and that's, and so imagine as a super fan, that is self-actualization.
That's so badass. Speaking of super fans, Michelle, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. We are thestoryguys@gmail.com. If you've got something you want to ask us that we can deep dive and dig into lots of articles and videos and bring you the story, we'd love to do it. We are thestoryguys@gmail.com. Also, you can check out wearethestoryguys.com. That's a website where you can learn more about us. We, of course, are on Instagram. I accidentally put us on Threads, so that's happened now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so thank you, everybody, that's joining that party with us. Patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories if you want to support the show, especially if you have a family trust.
And if you have a trust or a will.
Yeah, yeah.
I know how to write Threads, like write individual posts on there.
I mean, I think I know how to do it. It's like Twitter, right?
Oh no! It's ridiculous. It's like we'll write something, and this is what I see on there. It'll be like, well, I really wanted to go see Sum 41. You know, this is like their final tour they're ever going to do.
Yeah.
And I got up, you know, and I was really right up close, and I can't even believe that this happened to me. And that's it. And I see that, like, people do that all the time, where it's like, I went out on a date and he was, and I was so freaked out and I didn't know what to do.
That's how they got me on Threads.
And there's no ending.
Let me tell you a true story. Are you actually on Threads or are you seeing Threads through Instagram? We sound like two really old men right now.
No.
Okay. Okay, so you're on it.
I was my number. I got on it really quick. Like I got on it on the night that they launched it.
So here's what happened. I was checking the account, and there was a story, and it was like telling the story about being on a plane, and she's like, I couldn't believe this guy did this, and I was like, oh, I gotta know what it is, and I clicked the button, and then all of a sudden I was like downloading threads, and
you know what you found happened on that plane? Not a damn
thing. You know what I found out? It was a guy saving seats, and she was like, is this cool or no? And I was like, wait a second, what are we talking about? Southwest Airlines right now? This is what I got on Threads for. So come find us on Threads. I promise we're not as old as we sound.
And make sure and interact with us in unusual ways and don't finish your stories. Just
no! Listen, you got to keep telling stories.
That's right.
Oh, I did it.
You did it.
Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is a Story Guys production. The show is produced and edited by Brian Eichenberger. Get more stories, hear more podcasts, and book the guys for your conference or house party at wearethestoryguys.com. Copyright Boy Have We Got Stories Productions. All rights reserved.